SBS Radio.
In de studio, twee studiogasten. En de eerste, Anton Smit. Een goede en dierbare vriend en voormalig collega van VARA en IDTV. Filmproducent en producent van drama, even op bezoek in zijn geliefde Sydney. De trouwe luisteraar heeft eerder met je kennis kunnen maken toen ik je interviewde over het winnen van het Gouden Kalf voor de tv-serie Het Geheime Dagboek van Hendrik Groen, begin oktober vorig jaar. Gisteren aangekomen, een beetje goed geland?
Ja, redelijk. Het was een beetje shaky, maar we waren blij dat we er waren na 30 uur.
Maar 30 uur vliegen?
Nou ja, bij elkaar opgeteld ben je 30 uur onderweg.
Ja. Ja, toen, dat is toch een enorme tijd. We praten niet over je reis, maar vooral over wat je doet en waarom je reist. Want je hebt meerdere projecten in voorbereiding, zoals iedere filmproducent dat heeft. En een van die projecten is een film over de periode van Nederlands filmmaker Joris Evans in Sydney, toen hij een clandestine film maakte over de vrijheidsstrijd van de Indonesische bevolking in 1946... om van het Nederlands juk af te komen, Indonesia Calling.
Two countries in the Pacific linked by routes of trade and discovery are Australia and Indonesia. The war cut off their ocean contacts, but after the war, one of the first ships to make the journey was the Esperance Bay. You may remember the newsreel back in 1945.
1,400 Indonesians leave Australia by the Esperance Bay for Java, with a government undertaking that they will not be landed at any port in Dutch hands. An official of the Australian government goes with them to see that the guarantee is carried out. Friends and sweethearts crowd the wharf to say goodbye. Before the ship sails, E.V. Elliott, representing the combined Australian trade unions, speaks to the men.
As Federal Secretary of the Seamen's Union, on behalf of the trade union movement of Australia, I present to you this flag. Take it with you to your young republic as a symbol of the support of the Australian workers in your fight for independence.
En daar werd enthousiast op gereageerd door de werkers in de haven van Sydney in 1946. Dit was het geluid van de eerste anderhalve minuut van de oorspronkelijke documentaire van Joris Evans, die je ongetwijfeld vaak nu gezien hebt.
Ja,
want je bent bezig om een film te maken over die film.
We noemen het The Making of Indonesia Calling. Maar het belangrijkste reden om hem te maken is dat Evans een buitengewoon controversiële man in Nederland is geweest. Dat ging zelfs zover dat zijn nationaliteit hem werd ontnomen omdat hij te veel communistische sympathieën had. Je moet je voorstellen, jaren 40, jaren 50 was dat nogal een heftig ding. En dan leent zich dat natuurlijk voor drama en zijn leven was eigenlijk buitengewoon dramatisch. Met name de periode in Sydney. Hij heeft hier ongeveer een jaar gezeten. Eerst in Brisbane, later in Sydney. Waarin hij eerst werkte voor het Nederlandse regime. En later dus tegen het Nederlandse regime begon te werken. En vastlegde hoe de Australische samenleving, de wharfies en de seamen tegen Nederland waren. Ervoor zorgde dat Nederlandse boten niet meer werden gelost. Ja. Dus steeds, omdat daar ook best wapens aan boord waren. Dus dat liep behoorlijk uit de hand. En over die periode willen we een docudrama maken. Dus heel veel gedramatiseerde scènes, maar ook gebruikmakend van het materiaal uit de film. En ook gebruikmakend van materiaal wat er in Indonesische of in zowel Australische als een beetje in Nederlandse journaals in die tijd werd getoond.
Ja, dat betekent dat je plekken moet vinden die nog ongeveer zijn zoals het toen was in Sydney.
Nou, idealiter zoveel mogelijk plekken die er net zo uitzien. Want dan kun je zo'n film makkelijker maken dan wanneer je alles moet dressen. Ik vermoed dat we vrij veel interieuren zullen doen met name dan de hoofdrolspeler. Hij had ook nog een heel ingewikkeld persoonlijk leven, Evans. Hij hield er in die tijd al twee vrouwen op na. dat maakt het voor een dramamaker ook buitengewoon interessant om, om iets te doen. De een was al heel lang zijn vrouw en de ander was zijn cameravrouw. Zoiets in die tijd ook vrij ongebruikelijk was trouwens. Dus ja, het was gewoon een man waar het eigenlijk logisch van is dat je daar een keer een film over gaat maken. En dan met name over zijn periode in Sydney is onze keuze. En vooral ook mijn keuze. En we hopen dat... Het project ligt nu bij het Nederlandse Filmfonds. En we hopen binnen nu een anderhalve maand te horen of we de volgende stap mogen maken.
Oké, tot zover het eerste deel over Indonesia Calling.
Dit is SBS Radio Dutch.
Ook de gast in de studio, Ben Ferris. Ben, nice to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you, Franz. Thanks for having me.
Ben Ferris, after 14 years of being director and one of the founders of Sydney Film School, you have decided to leave, to say goodbye. What happened?
Well, 14 years is a long time in the one role, I think it's fair to say. And I'm also a filmmaker and have my filmmaking career aspirations as well as my educational aspirations. So I felt it was time after 14 years to get back on the front and roll my sleeves up and get back into the film production scene.
Let's listen to sounds that are very familiar from to hear on this at Sydney Film School.
Vertigo, a feeling of dizziness, a swimming in the head. Figuratively, a state in which all things seem to be engulfed in a whirlpool of terror, as created by Alfred Hitchcock in the story that gives new meaning to the word suspense.
I don't want to die. There's someone inside me, and she says I must die. Scotty, don't let me go.
A beautiful girl haunted by the desperate, unexplainable urge to destroy herself. A man possessed by the paralyzing vertigo that made him afraid of high places.
Easy now.
I know. Well, it's a cinch. Here, I look up. I look down. I look up. I look...
What was the strange attraction that brought these two together in spite of the dark forces that tore them apart? The specter from the past that drew her to the ancient headstone in the mission graveyard. The compulsion that drove her relentlessly to the point of no return. The story of a love so powerful it broke down all barriers between past and present, between life and death, between the golden girl in the dark tower and the tawdry redhead that he tried to remake in her image.
And of course, Ben, you do very well recognize this trailer of the film Vertigo. So I don't have to tell you, but just for everyone who's listening, what am I listening to? Well, and I was introducing this by saying this is a very common sound that you can hear being student or teacher at a Sydney Film School. What is the... Together with Citizen Kane and Chinatown, what is the role of these classic movies?
Yeah, well, they wrestle with each other, particularly Citizen Kane and Vertigo over years have wrestled with each other for the top role of best film of all time. I think Vertigo has reclaimed number one most recently. This is a very heated debate, of course, between film critics. Vertigo is an extraordinary film, and of course we want the students to see the very best and aspire to be the very best. So I think with Vertigo and Hitchcock, not only do you have an exercise in incredible control and precision, what he's famous for, but also experimentation, and that's something that is often forgotten about. And Vertigo has these long shot sequences, for instance, where when the lovers are together or reunited in the hotel scene, for instance, and you can miss it on a first viewing, as we wrote, the camera rotates around the couple in the hotel room. But what Hitchcock does is move us into the studio and transport us back in time to when they first met. It's a very subtle thing, but a very beautiful thing as well.
And you use those movies, those classic films, for the student to recreate the scenes. I mean, did you work with that amount of budgets?
Well, no. I think it's fair to say that at a film school, you're working with a lot less than perhaps what Hitchcock was working with originally. But that's part of the charm and the challenge. And, of course, the students have to find their own way through the material. And part of the fun is you play the student's version of the scene, then you play Hitchcock or you play Wells, and you look, you spot the differences. Often it's a case of where the students could have done a lot better. Sometimes, surprisingly, the students have made a credible choice that in some ways maybe doesn't outdo a Hitchcock, but it certainly puts a fair spin on it. So it's quite fun to compare the two. And the students learn a lot through the process of making their own decisions and comparing them against the original filmmaker's decision.
Yeah. And before we will learn about your next steps, what made you and the fellow founders create the Sydney Film School? At that time, all of you or most of them were working for Sydney Film, Sydney University about film.
Yes, well, if you think kind of the word cooperative springs to mind. I mean, we were a bunch of filmmakers who were working out of this little studio underground at the University of Sydney, and we were producing material, and in the process we were running workshops and teaching students. And these were kind of casual weekend-style workshops, but there were also car maintenance programs, yoga courses at the University of Sydney. And there was these strange courses working on these odd machines called Steambecks where you're running 16mm through. But it sort of developed a bit of a cult following. There's a kind of mystique of working with the celluloid film back then. So these funny little film courses actually became very popular and surprisingly, even to us, gained momentum to the point where, as a cooperative, we decided we've got to expand and make this thing bigger because we're actually running out of space here. So it was really an organic thing, and then out of that process, we ended up moving away from the university and establishing the Sydney Film School 14 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And it was not because of feeling discomfort with the curriculum of the university?
Well, we had a lot of independence with the curriculum back then because it wasn't actually part of the formal university academic curriculum. It was these sort of vocational, hobby weekend style program. So we actually had a lot of autonomy in the way that we devised those. But increasingly, yes, because these programs developed in their own right in a vocational space, the fit with the university was increasingly uncomfortable. It didn't make sense.
So you started your career, as I just heard before we started the conversation on live radio, as an actor. As Anton has his start in theater as well, did you?
Yes, but not as an actor. I was the business manager of a theater company, and in that sense, I met Australia because the company was called International Theater Company KISS. They were an incredible success in the 70s, I think. It was in Adelaide. And from then on, they did tours of Australia. And I, as the manager, I set up those tours. So I visited Australia 2-3 times a year and got to know Australia quite good and like it.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.